Okay, hello. My name is Andrea Calori. I am the program manager at Berkshire Grown. For those of you who don't know, Berkshire Grown is a nonprofit located in the Berkshires with the mission to support and promote local agriculture as a vital part of our region's community, economy, and landscape. This podcast series is an opportunity for farmers to hear from other farmers about what they are doing and how they are doing it. It's a great way to share stories and learn from each other. Today, I have Lee Hennessy of Moxie Ridge Farm and Creamery, which is a small diversified farm on 46 acres in Argyle, New York. Welcome, Lee.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. I was hoping you can start off by just giving a little introduction to the farm and what you're doing.
Sure, yeah. So Moxie Ridge is, as you mentioned, a small diversified farm and creamery. We are located in Washington County, New York, and that is right at the Vermont border. So that gives you kind of an idea of the climate. So the main business of the farm is the creamery. I have a herd of alpine, primarily alpine goats, a couple saddens in there. They are all raised here. It's a closed herd. With all of my animals, it's primarily animal based. I'm not good at growing things. With each of my animals, all of their inputs, so, you know, their food, everything comes from either this farm or the land immediately surrounding it. A big kind of driving force behind this farm and the food that I produce is the concept of terroir, which is a French word usually used in relationship to wine, which just means like a sense of place in food. So by raising all of my animals on what is grown here on the farm and the land surrounding it, that actually makes their milk and their meat completely unique. We're, as you could guess, you know, the management style is focused on more kind of pre-industrial farming methods. In terms of, you know, the farming itself, behavioralism is a really big part of my management style. I just really enjoy goat herding in general. I totally agree. This is why we get along.
That's right.
So in terms of the overall business, you know, that herd is super, super crucial. We have a New York State licensed on farm creamery. Just got a grant through New York Grown and Certified to do a renovation of the creamery. So now we have a big, beautiful cheese room, new aging caves, and just started wholesaling. This year was going to be a very, very big year on the cheese production side, because with the help of that grant and with the natural growth of my milking herd, we were finally in a position to begin wholesaling on a larger scale. I drive down to the city once a week to sell in Union Square on Fridays. That's been the financial backbone of the farm since I started it in 2018, started going down to market rather. We're going into our fourth season now, to give you an idea. That day, coming from, you know, the Vermont border, going all the way down to Union Square in New York City with refrigerated product, that's a 22-hour day. So, you know, I would get up at 2 a.m. And then I would finish unpacking at midnight, you know, the following morning. And then I would go to another market the next day. And in terms of kind of how it all fits together here, I also do pigs. I raise them on the way from the creamery. I've got a, you know, pretty small laying flock. And I have sheep for meat and fiber. And I say we, by that I mean, you know, me and my staff. But it's in terms of, you know, the farm itself. I'm the only owner, I'm the only farmer, the only cheesemaker. So it's kind of a one man show.
I remember when I first met you, it was about, I want to say 2.5 years ago now, maybe 3.
I think you're right.
Yeah. And, I remember being really impressed that the entire operation was sustained by you. From, you know, just our conversations and from what I understand, you've done a lot of work with grant writing and getting grants to help support operations at the farm. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because especially like in your position now, having, you know, you're going into your fourth season, you have some experience under your belt with managing the farm and getting those grants. I imagine for emerging farmers, that would be useful just to hear about your experiences with that.
Absolutely. My number one advice regarding grants is get to know your organizations. And by that, I mean the organizations that are either creating those grants or administering those grants. It always helps to have a relationship with them, not because you're going to be favored, because that's just not how grants work. But you will be able to have specific questions about these specific grants, about these applications answered, and you will be in a better position to tailor, you know, your application and your ask, to what they're looking for. The, you know, I'm not a grant writer, and I certainly don't get every grant that I put in for, and you know, I do want to mention in the second, you know, the different types of grants, because I think, you know, sometimes before I started doing this, I went in wide-eyed thinking every grant was like, you know, was just straight up cash. And it's not, people, it's not. Like the main thing to remember is that these grants exist because someone somewhere is trying to accomplish something, right? So maybe it's your state, maybe it's the federal government, or one of the, you know, a department within that. Maybe it's an individual, you know, that is providing these funds through an organization, or maybe it's an organization itself. But no matter what, they want to accomplish something very specific. So if you have that relationship or create some type of a relationship with the organization that is administering that grant, you have the opportunity to find out what exactly the grant is trying to do. That way you can help them look good by putting together an application, you know, and if you don't fit, then don't waste your time. But if you do fit, you know, you can put together an application that fits perfectly with the grant. It will help you out because you need these things. It will help, you know, the people that made the grant because they obviously put this money or, you know, set of resources aside in order to accomplish something, and you're helping them accomplish their goal. So that's like the kind of 1-2 punch that I would recommend is that one, even if there are no grants going on right now, like find out what organizations are in your area that support farmers or that are at least aware of these grants, sometimes that they do grants, and reach out and, you know, don't be like, oh, hey, I want to talk to you about grants. Be like, I'm a farmer. You help farmers, you know, what type of assistance can, you know, can you help me with? You know, so just remember that there's always two sides of it, you know, even though it's like, seems like free money to you, somebody's trying to get something done on the other side. So if you can help them do that, like you have a better shot at it. The other thing about grants is that like, it's not, you know, a lot of times it's like not free money. And I don't mean like to sound dismissive. Some grants are free money, and that's great. It's free money with a lot of paperwork attached to it and a lot of stress, but, right. But sometimes it's, you know, I, for example, I got, grant when I was going through the starting this farm and with the property deal and everything else. And one of the grants was legal help. Hmm. You know, so it was an organization that just directly paid a lawyer to help me with it, which is a nightmare. So not the lawyer, the transition was a nightmare with the property. So that was a big help. You know, sometimes organizations have micro grants. I work very closely with Grow NYC Farmer Assistance, which is like the nonprofit, like, as you can imagine, Farmer Assistance wing of the Grow NYC, the Green Market Organization. Mm. And they make micro grants available every year. So they had a micro grant for marketing that I was able to utilize towards printing like reusable tote bags that I then sold to raise money for some driveway work. The best thing you can do is have a good relationship, ask what's available, and ask what they're trying to accomplish with it.
That's great advice. I'm always amazed how much work you're getting done and all the resources that you find and put together. And it just seems like, it also seems like it's a ton of work, just like on the administrative end of your farming. I'm not quite sure how you managed to get all of it done.
My house is a mess and I'm still working on the sleep part of it, but yeah.
Before we jump into the Moxie Box, which I really do want to talk about, but I just want to say, like, one of the things that I think has just been, again, that I've always been impressed by is the fortitude with which you've done everything and how you, it's really, it was a one-man show over there for such a long time. And I know that you have help now, but, and even still, I think you have, what, two people that are, folks get a chance to one day visit Moxie Ridge. I mean, really, it's amazing because there's a lot going on and all being done well. That's the other thing. It's being done well.
You just absolutely made my day. Thank you.
No, it's incredible. It's kind of...
When you do visit people when the world is right side up, just know that this is a scrappy farm. It is a working farm.
It is a working farm. It's true. But it's an amazing one to witness, just because, again, the amount of work you're putting into it and the resources that you've been able to find is just really a testament to if someone has the drive to get it done, it's possible. I think that's pretty amazing. So I do want to talk about the Moxie Box. I had mentioned this earlier when we talked about doing this interview. One of the things that farmers, are trying to handle is this intense pivot as the market landscape is changing. A lot of farmers that have done wholesale are now starting to think retail, moving from direct sales in person to trying to translate those sales into online sales, handling delivery and curbside pickup. And I think there's a lot out there and everyone's just like pulling to see what works and what doesn't. And the model that you've come up with is pretty compelling. So I'm curious to hear more about it and what you're doing in response to the pandemic crisis that's going on right now.
Sure. Yeah. I feel like, and you let me know, guide me if this is not the way to do it, but I feel like if I can kind of tell this in like a narrative way, and that way you guys can see kind of how it all came together. Yeah. I'll give you a little rundown of like what the service is, and then I'll talk to you guys about what, I'll talk to you and everyone else about like the reasons why it ended up being what it is. I mentioned that the financial backbone of my farm was going down to New York City. While those markets are still open and they're pretty much the gold standard of safety in farmers markets right now through the whole pandemic, I have chosen not to go down. So I basically, my income shut down very, very quickly. I So like a lot of other farmers, you know, needed an option to get my stuff out. So MoxieBox is a it's a custom farm to doorstep food box. People can order online. They can choose whatever they want. There's no order minimum, or there's a $30 order minimum, but there's no kind of recurring charges or commitments or subscriptions. Mm-hmm. And as long as they're within the delivery area, it gets delivered for free. There's a 1 day a week delivery. So the response to it has been pretty great. Now I built it, you know, I built it all myself. Also, you guys will have to please excuse the goats in the background. It's kidding season, so I have the baby monitor on.
And, everyone's going to love that when they hear this. Okay.
So essentially, what I needed and why I built all of this, you know, completely custom. And that's not something that, like, I recommend, like, hey, everybody, you know, spend 6 weeks, you know, not sleeping and, like, building, you know, an entire website on, like, an established e-commerce platform. But I'll tell you kind of why. So my background before this was in a few different industries, but always somehow kind of related to marketing. My last job before I left everything to move back to this coast and learn how to farm and make cheese was at a media company. So I'm pretty comfortable with tech, at least the concept of it. So when things went down, the options were, and if somebody's listening to this, they'll be like, oh yeah, 100%. You know, you could essentially get something like Localine, or you could get something like GrazeCart, or you could get, you know, another solution that's meant specifically for farmers, mm-hmm. To offer their stuff online. And it's very easy for the farmer. You can just, you don't even need to take pictures of your own stuff. They have a picture of an apple. They have a picture of, you know, pork. They have a picture of lettuce. Mm-hmm. And you just say how much of whatever you have, you know, you type that in and it'll show. And then you, like, it already has all of the delivery logistics, like, baked into the software. Mm-hmm. And then all you have to do is decide, okay, you know, I'm going to do deliveries on this date. And then, you know, it'll tell you, okay, you know, pick 7 lettuce and 20 carrots and all the rest of it, and, like, boom, done. And it's super easy for the farmer, and you pay anywhere from, like, you know, $20 to $90 for that a month, depending on who you go with. I did not want to do that, because as simple as it is on the farmer side, on the customer side, I hated it. I don't, like, if you go to my website, or if you go to MoxieBox, and the site for that is Moxie, MoxieBox.com, to see what I'm talking about. The look of everything is very important to me, because that's a big part of marketing. And it's if you're shopping, that's your experience. So it's the difference between, like, walking into a store that looks like, you know, Ross Dress for Less, or like a bad TJ Maxx with clothes everywhere.
Yeah. Like, I equate it sometimes to this feeling of, like, when I go to visit my family in Italy and I go to the market, the idea of shopping is like this enjoyable and aesthetic experience. It's really beautiful. Yes. And it definitely, for the consumer, makes it an experience, exactly that, as opposed to just a chore or an errand that needs to be done.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and the truth of it is, it's going to be an experience either way. It's just like, is it going to be a good experience? Is it going to be totally not memorable? Is it going to be a nightmare?
Right.
So, and, you know, the same goes for online. And so the reason why I, on the look side, was like, this is absolutely not, was because those solutions were meant for, you know, farms to offer to their existing customers. Hmm. You might get another, you know, another one or two. But what I didn't, you know, I wasn't going to be delivering to my New York City customers. And that was a huge part of my customer base. So I needed more sales than just my current customers at my local markets in order to make it. And so what I didn't need is just a simple way to get product to a smaller percentage of my customers, because not all my customers are going to go online or order whatever. I needed a way to increase my sales and to reach more people. So I have a marketing background, so I made something that would be easy for me to market. It was tough to build, but easy to market. So that's what I ended up doing, which means that I, you know, I did it all myself. And so I, you know, I chose a different platform, and, you know, that cost money. And then I integrated like six different, you know, third-party software solutions. And of course they cost money. And then, you know, worked with the developer on this side, Grow NYC Farmer Assistance, was able to, take one of their, tech folks and give me a couple hours a week with him as a way of supporting it. That was huge. There's a local brewery here, R.S. Taylor Brewery. Rich and Kelly Taylor of the brewery have been incredibly supportive, both on like just on a personal side and on a logistics side. You know, so like flash, we don't need to go into like all of the gnarly details, but like, you know, flash cut to, okay, finally I get it done. And of course, this is during kitting season. So I'm like, I've got my computer in the parlor as I'm training, you know, my apprentice, and I've got, you know, I'm not sleeping, and, you know, I'm like, there's like birthing goo on my $80 Chromebook because I'm doing this in between pulling babies. So like, you know, it worked, it, you know, we got it up. I knew that I wanted everything to be really beautiful, and this was a way for me to do that. I also wanted an experience for my customers that was more in line with, you know, let's say your experience in Italy would be like an experience at shopping at like a really nice online website. Mm. I wanted it to be that level. You know, I wanted it to be like, you know, I'm going to like whatever Birchbox, or I'm going to, you know, this like lovely online boutique, or I'm, you know, I wanted it to feel fun and interesting, not gross and like, oh, this is, looks like a janky website, looks like a janky farm website. You know, here's a stock picture of an apple. I wanted something that would get people really excited and inspired about their food. Because the other part of this is, you know, my pork, for example, it's not just like, hey, here's some pork. It's forest raised. It's way fed every single day. They're way fed every single day. They're either heritage or heritage crosses. I've moved into Mangalitsa crosses and they've been amazing, but they're very slow growers, yeah. Even with all the way. They are supplemented with a locally grown for terroir, locally grown non-GMO feed that I buy from another small farm. And then they're processed once a year because they're finished on acorns and hickory nuts. So like that is not cheap to make and it is not cheap to buy. So I needed to be able to also target people that would appreciate that style of meat and wouldn't be upset because they're not at grocery store prices. Mm-hmm. So that was my, you know, that was the gamble, is that like, okay, if I can accomplish all of these things, you know, I think that I can create a sustainable model for me that can, you know, for right now replace all the income that I've lost. And once this is done, you know, still have, you know, a great and scalable, you know, business model to go from. So at this point, I should probably mention that during this, when I realized that like, I wanted customers to have this experience, it's not just my stuff. I sell cheese and I sell meat. And while that stuff is delicious, it's like somebody's not going to spend. I need to do a $30 minimum in order to make delivery worth it. Mm. Somebody's not going to be buying, you know, $30 of cheese and meat necessarily every week, no matter how beautiful I make the site. Mm. So I was like, at first I was like, oh, maybe I'll bring, you know, another farm in. Maybe I'll, you know, bring Gina's maple in and like, oh, maybe I'll do this, maybe. And then all of a sudden I started getting some really good response from a few farmers and they're like, oh yeah, this sounds awesome. So I was like, what if I really open it up? And so that concept of like, okay, it's going to basically be a little farmer's market. online, you know, but, you know, for us, it functions as a farmer's market. The logistically, it's, you know, my farmers drop at the food hub, which is at that brewery, R.S. Taylor Brewery, because they're not using their walk-in right now. They drop at the food hub once a week. They find out what they're going to harvest on Friday morning because we shut down sales for the week on Thursday night. And they harvest direct for it, just like they harvest direct for their markets. You know, I don't have to interrupt my production schedule on making, you know, it slots right into my market schedule. And so, you know, I wanted to pick and choose from the farm side, you know, the best parts of that, of working at a market while hopefully leaving the worst parts behind.
And so who's doing the deliveries for the folks that are ordering from you?
That would be me. Okay. And Rich Taylor, Rich and Kelly Taylor right now. So this is very much like a bunch of farmers, you know, banding together.
Right. There's been examples of collaboratives being formed even out here in Western Massachusetts, not as many. So that's why I was also curious about how this box was working. Can you speak a little bit to just how the group of you is managing the delivery, which I think you were just about to start to talk about, and then also how the other farmers feel about the program so far? I mean, I know it's a service you've just recently launched, so you haven't had that much time doing it, but I'd be curious to hear how everyone's feeling about it.
Yeah, for sure. So in terms of the collaboration, you know, I keep mentioning Rich and Kelly, and they, you know, from the very beginning, they're like, "Dude, this is a really good idea. Like, we should like 100%. Let's do it." So they've been a big part of it. They used to, Rich used to run residential newspaper routes in the 2000s. So yeah, he's amazing. He's an amazing resource for figuring out delivery. So, you know, I know what I want the user interface to be. I know what I want the branding to be. I know what I want the products to be available. Anything with delivery, I'm like, Rich, what do you think? So he's literally been like the delivery, advisor guy, and he's out there dropping stuff as well. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons why, you know, with in New York State, like most states, you know, liquor is very tightly controlled. We can't sell their beer on MoxieBox. I wish that I could, because I'd love to support them as well. But what we're doing is, anybody can buy beer. You can legally deliver beer here as long as you've got, you know, your license and a few other things from the liquor board. And so we're delivering there. You can order their beer on their website, make it all legal, and then we drop it. So that's been a huge part of it. When I was like, you know, in the depths of it, I was like, Rich, I don't know if I can scale. What does that look like, you know, to like just keep expanding? And he really talked me through it. Our beef farmer is also an incredibly talented photographer. So while he's not doing the product photography, he's going to be doing all of the farm photography, since it's very much like a farm centered site. So, I mean, that's literally like him, like going around to each of the farms, doing portraits of the farmers. A big part of what I want MoxieBox to be is like for people to connect their food with their farmer, period, done. So literally on every product page, I believe it gives you the name of the farmers.
That's great.
So Ariel of Hebron Valley Veal, they do an awesome humanely raised rose veal. She helps with packing every Sunday, and might jump in to do some very local deliveries too. So yeah, it's been very much kind of like a collaborative, let's all figure it out. I mean, at the end of the day, it was created by a farmer who wants to move his product. Mm-hmm. So that's what it's set up to do. Right now, ultimately, it's going to need, you know, we'll end up moving over into a wholesale model once we're out there and you know, the proof of concept is pretty solid after a month or two, and the growing season's in full swing and stuff. But as of right now, about 60 to 70% of the farms that are selling are on the farm partner model, which basically is they pay a platform fee and the credit card processing. The platform fee is 10%. It's literally just enough to, you know, for me to not hemorrhage money on the MoxieBox side. My farm pays 10%. We all pay 10%. Okay. And you know, the rest is like a direct consumer sale. So they're making at least 20% more than wholesale. And you know, ultimately that's not sustainable for MoxieBox as a whole, but for right now it works for everybody. Like, farmers are getting sales, customers are getting food. You know, and we'll see. So yeah, so phase one is just like money to farms, money to farms, money to farms. Don't lose any money, Lee. But yeah. So, and then we'll see. The big part of like our phase two is going to be the option for subscription boxes. So then we'll be buying in a bunch of produce and, you know, and other fun things from farms as well.
And have you found the community to be responding well to the MoxieBox and getting a lot of support?
Yes. Great. Yeah, people are super excited about it. I think a big part of it is because, you know, logistically it's harder and you don't make as much money on the, let's say, like, look at MoxieBox as like a company, right? Mm-hmm. So like, if I wasn't a farmer and I was just doing this to make money, I would not deliver to rural areas.
Right.
Because it takes a lot longer to get from one place to another. So, you know, maybe I can only deliver, this is what I learned from Rich, like maybe I can only deliver like five or six, like in an hour, depending on how rural it is. Whereas like I could deliver five or six in a city or a town in like 20 minutes.
Right.
So there's a lot of small, that's an example of, you know, of one decision where it's like, if I was not a farmer and I was like, oh, this is how I'm going to make money, I'm going to pay my bills with MoxieBox. You know, I wouldn't run it the way that I run it. I would certainly not, not do farm partnerships, and I would not offer, you know, the delivery to the areas that we do. When we started, we started delivering to our neighbors. So we offered delivery in Washington County. That was like the first one. We did our mini launch, we did Washington County and like a few zip codes neighboring. And that's where we'll always be. So first and foremost, like, we're servicing this area. And, you know, I live here. We're not used to being, to getting cool stuff. You know, it's usually like years ago. We just got Lyft last year. Like, other than before that, we didn't have a taxi service. We literally had a guy named Steve, like, literally Google it, be like, taxi Washington County. And it's like, this guy named Steve is going to pop up. I swear to God. And if he's like asleep, like, you're out of luck. This is God's honest truth. So like, you know, that's, so the fact that like we're getting this thing, and it's, you know, and it's meant to look nice. It's not like, oh, this is good enough for country people. Like, it's meant to be exciting and it's meant to be inspirational. And eventually we will get down the metro areas around me are the capital region, and kind of surrounding areas. So Albany, Schenectady, Detroit. You know, eventually we'll get there. That's obviously the plan. But for right now, you know, we're focusing on up here, and people are super excited about it.
I think it's great. It's really wonderful. I want to just encourage folks who are listening to this, we're going to wind down a little bit, but to check out your website for your farm, which is moxieridgefarm.com, and then to check out the MoxieBox website, which is moxie-box.com. And I can't emphasize enough the, you know, you've spoken quite a bit to the importance of marketing and the aesthetic. And I think that these two sites really are great at sharing the story of what you're trying to do. And inspiring people. It's worth the time. There was something you had mentioned in our conversation where you said it was tough to build but easy to market. And I think that succinctly says quite a bit about the importance of investing the time and making sure your presentation is solid. So that way, when it does come to whether it's pivoting your sales approach or doing more direct consumer sales and retail, marketing your farm product is going to be that much easier because you already have what's in place, what's required in place.
Yeah, it's a lot like, you know, I probably learned the lesson backwards to a lot of farmers, but like that's something that I knew going into it. But, you know, on the farming side, you know, it's the same thing as like, if you, you know, if something breaks down or you need a new outbuilding or you need a new something, you know, it's worth it to invest the money in it, you know, to make sure that it lasts through the seasons. And so you're not, you know, if like put the irrigation in, like put it in, you know what right. I mean? Don't be like, oh, I'm just going to like drag a hose out every day. Like it's not going to be sustainable. You know what I mean? Like don't build it out of pallets, guys. Like, you know, figure it out. Like, dude, I've built it out of pallets. I've dragged the hose out. Like it's, you know, and so I had to learn that lesson, but it's the same exact thing with marketing. Like you put the time in, it doesn't even have to cost money, but if you put the time in, then it's, you know, it'll be worth it and it'll last through the seasons.
Well, Lee, thank you so much for offering to sit down, I was going to say, because I'm so used to saying that. Well, I'm sitting down, but for taking the time to chat with me, I think a lot of what you said this morning is going to be useful for other folks. And I do encourage people to go when you can to visit Moxie Ridge, and especially when we're able to, just because, again, I can't speak highly enough of what Lee's doing out there. And
thank you.
It is it's a pretty amazing place. Thank you so much for sharing. And
of course.
Look forward to talking to you soon.
Same. Thanks again.
Take care.